tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. If you had the power, how would you shape the future? I don't mean your own private future, more money, or taking a trip, or meeting the right girl. I mean the future of everybody, the future of the world. If you could sit back and imagine for a moment the power to shape the course of the entirety of the earth and remake the world a little closer to your heart's desire, what kind of a world would it be? If you want to hear what high school students are saying, and they're supposed to be the leaders of tomorrow's world, here's what some of them said when they were asked by a magazine, a youth magazine in Southern California, what kind of a world would they like to see in the world tomorrow? How would they shape the future? And these students are the cream of tomorrow's crop, remember, the generation of tomorrow. Here's how they would picture that world. A junior girl in high school said, "My children's world, I hope, will be one of peace and prosperity, to rid the world of war, hatred, and sorrow, and to bring about peace, love, and happiness is my greatest wish. I feel that when the power of love overcomes the love of power, then shall the world know peace." Pretty eloquent statement for a junior girl in high school, wasn't it? A sophomore girl said, "I want to see world harmony. World peace is not good enough. Harmony is working together." A senior boy expressed it this way, "I hope there will be fewer world problems, but I don't expect it. There will be many of the same problems we have today, plus a few new ones." A girl who was a senior said, "I'd like to see propaganda wiped out altogether and would like to see better international relations promoted. I see a future world with all countries equal in power and all presidents forming a board to solve all world problems and to keep checks and balances on each other." And a junior boy said, "Without strife, man stagnates. That's why I don't think we'll live to see world peace. I don't think it should come about." He reasoned, "Strife, he said, has given us rockets that can speed a warhead to blow up another country, and that can put a man on the moon. Strife has spurred us on to unlocking the secret of the atom, which gave us the atom bomb and atomic reactors to supply entire cities with electricity." So this boy sees man's energies bent toward war and conquest and competition, and since momentarily during rounds or resting points between world war we use as a sort of a byproduct of these weapons manufacturing and the development of larger and more massive engines of destruction, we tend to get a little bit of what you might call good, if it is good, the space race I mean, if it is good, atomic reactors for the use of large cities and delight them, we tend to get a little bit of a byproduct of good out of them. He sees strife as a good thing. Now, another one who was a student body president of a school said, "The world's population is growing, and automation is growing along with it. By the turn of the century, I think we will have the same problems we have today that are caused by massive population, only then they will be on a larger scale." Well, there you have the views of some teenagers in high school. Now, regardless as to whether you agree or disagree with any or all of these notions, you may feel some of them are juvenile and you may feel others are filled with wisdom beyond mere years. Regardless as to how these boys and girls expressed it, they all expressed one overall thing. You see, the combination of admissions that plenty is wrong with the world today, secondly, that few, if any, see any real practical ways to change it, yet every one of them, whether they express it in sarcasm or hopefulness, admitting that change is badly needed. And isn't that just about the way most people look at it? They see the world is filled with problems, if they're willing to even admit that much to themselves, and few people are. They see the world badly needs to be changed. They don't see how to change it, and so most simply practice ignoring it. We tried that with everything from Elvis Presley to the Beatles and everything from pop music to pop clothes. We tried it with every notion that has ever come along, including the idea of the United States citizens prior to World War II that our two oceans would defend us and we didn't need to get involved in Asia or the South Pacific or with Germany's submarine fleets or the like, and we thought we could practice isolationism and stay clear out of World War II, and we would have called someone warning us about what was happening in the Pacific with Japan, about Japan's Navy, an alarmist. We would have said someone writing magazine and newspaper articles then about war impending in the South Pacific was an absolute alarmist. He was off his rocker. He didn't know what he was talking about. The world was no worse than it had ever been. Things were going along great. We would talk about how we'd come out of a great, terrible problem economically, how the Dust Bowl of the 30s was now over and crops were good again. We'd weathered the Great Depression. Jobs were more plentiful. Everything was going along real well. Lots of people would have really scoffed, and they did, at people who warned about what was happening leading up to World War II. Meanwhile, our peoples were playing. Well, World War II came along, and we thought we'd learned our lesson. During World War II, we thought that the Russian people were our strongest ally. We sent them multiple hundreds of millions and eventually billions of dollars in aid. And we were firmly tied in with Soviet Russia against Germany, Italy, and Japan. Now we are firmly tied in with Germany, Japan, and Italy against Soviet Russia, or at least so we think. It's a strange world we live in. And immediately in about 1946, everybody with a gasp of amazement, because apparently he was only believing what he would like to believe and believing what he was told, not the truth, discovered that Soviet Russia had her own designs for world conquest and began to be told, and many people didn't want to believe it, that world communism had as its goal world dominion. All types of tracts and pamphlets and booklets and radio broadcasts came out. Mr. J. Edgar Hoover of the FBI and others tried to convince Americans that there was a real threat to communism, and it took many, many years until finally many Americans began to wake up to the fact that there is a threat to communism. British leaders saw it apparently even sooner than some of us in this country did. So it's amazing, the swinging of the pendulum of human beings and at our notions about world conditions. Today, people are playing a bizarre game of hide-and-go-seek. Seek pleasure, entertainment, ready-made daydreams, and deny the worsening conditions all around you. Now, repeatedly on this program, The World Tomorrow, I've said the only good news you're going to hear, that you're going to find, comes from a totally ignored news source. News before it occurs, tomorrow's news today, the good news about a world government, the world tomorrow, a world of peace, a world of one world government, one language, one religion, one great united family of nations, each firmly tied in with the other, under a world court with world law, and a world police force capable of immediately and instantaneously enforcing that law. World peace is coming. However people want to express what they desire in the world tomorrow, it's going to come. But not at all in the way you imagine. Not from the source most people would believe. Not in the way they would think. That good news was predicted centuries ago. Few people realize Jesus Christ of Nazareth, of the New Testament, of your Bible, foretold our day. They don't realize that he was able to admit all the problems the way they really are, that he was able to look down beyond his day into ours and to tell us in advance we were going to get into some of the most inextricable problems that mankind had ever faced, to analyze them clearly in the cold, hard light of reality, to tell us exactly the course human nature was going to take, the unbelievable problems of our time, to admit they're really as bad as they are, and in spite of all of that, give us some good news beyond it and tell us the outcome in advance. Now, he predicted you would be living, for example, in a time where several major world changes would occur coincidentally at the same time. He talked about wars and rumors of wars, so we finished World War II, and we've had more than 40 since, and numerous ones are going on right now. A disputed area between India and Pakistan, Yemen and Aden, the terrible slaughter of peoples between the two Congos still going on. I had a personal letter from a person down there talking about truckloads of men, women, and children being slaughtered in the bush of the Congo, but you don't get it in the news very often. The war in Vietnam occupies the big headlines, yes, but there are plenty of other wars going on that people don't generally recognize. We're living in a time of wars and rumors of wars. He talked about violent upsets in the weather, about increasing natural, if they are natural, catastrophes, about disease epidemics growing, pestilences, increasing, well, why not put it in his own words? Let him tell you what was going to happen. He talked about all these things happening at the same time. You'll find it in the pivotal prophecy of all the Bible in Matthew 24, and beginning in verse 3, where his disciples said, "Tell us, when shall these things be?" He'd been talking about his intervention in the course of human governments. Now, people have a big laugh over that one, but that's all right. People have a laugh over sick jokes, too. And neither should be laughed at. They said, "Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of your coming and the consummation of the age?" Not the end of the world. People hear about the end of the world. You see some bearded beatnik walking up and down some park with a plaque on his back or a banner that he's carrying about flee from the wrath to come or the end of the world is near. Now, the Bible doesn't talk about the end of the world, meaning the blasting of all humankind off of the world, except as a potential threat. And says that will not occur because an intervention is going to occur, but it talks about the end of the age, the end of an era, the end of one time, the end of a certain age of man's experience, and the dawning of a new age. The margin has it, the consummation of the age, there in verse 3 of Matthew 24. And he said, "Take heed that no man deceive you, because many will come in my name, saying, I'm the Christ, and shall deceive many." And that's been happening continually. You can hear every brand and swan song and hideous sobbing and crying and gasping and wheezing, or you can hear the very respectable and the very dignified appeal of any kind of brand of religion available. And there are hundreds. There are literally hundreds. Not only the great giant Oriental religions, Taoism, Confucianism, Shintoism, Buddhism, you name it, there's an ism for it. But also the many hundreds of differing sects and denominations and groups in the Western world of professing Christianity. Now, this has occurred. And incidentally, I won't apologize for what the Bible says. The Bible says in Revelation 12 and verse 9 that there is a great being who has deceived all nations. It doesn't say a few. Now, you can do with that what you will. I know you can find many people that will disagree with that, but then, of course, you can find many people who even disagree with the fact of God's existence. He went on to say that in spite of all of the religious fervor, there would be plenty of religious confusion, and also, he said, wars and rumors of wars. Now, he said all of this at the same time. First one thing, then another, overlapping and compounding the insult, one thing adding to another. He said wars and rumors of wars. He said in verse 7, "Nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines." Now, if you don't believe my news sources, and they're the same as yours, we have 2 wire services directly to Ambassador College campus. Our own news bureau that reports from all foreign publications, from leading newspapers, news magazines, and news sources around the world, plus literally dozens of thousands of interested listeners who write and send clippings continually, plus offices around the world subscribing to their own leading and most prestigious news sources. If you don't believe that, then at least believe the Almanac or recent history. Nation has been rising against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There have been famines, fantastic famines. We're headed for a cycle of famines. India is trembling on the brink of one of the most giant famines of all of history. Red China the same way. Central and South America the same thing. Growing disparity between foodstuffs and the mouths to feed them. Now he went on to say, and pestilences, and of course that always follows in the wake of famine and the lack of foodstuffs and bad weather, the pollution of surface water and air, not only in our big megalopolises of the Western world, but even in the downtrodden areas, with the endemic diseases of some of the rainforests of the earth and the undernourished, underfed areas that are so susceptible to disease. He said pestilences, and they are beginning to occur, and they will grow worse. And earthquakes in diverse places, and you're living in a time of increasing and unusual earthquake activity. Now, if you want to deny that these things are true, help yourself. Have at it. That isn't going to change it, but I realize fully and deeply, and I sympathize with you, I really do, that every human being is going to believe exactly what he wants to believe, regardless as to the facts. I know that it's human nature that people say, "Don't confuse me with the facts. I'm going to believe exactly what appeals to me and what makes me happy." Remind you of the punch-drunk boxer staggering around the ring. His eyes are crossed, his nose is flattened like a ripe banana halfway across his face, his mouth is cut open, his ears are hanging loose like as not. They're trying to stop the fight, and he says, "What do you mean stop the fight? He hasn't laid a glove on me." That's about the way the world looks. You know, we like to deny that these conditions are with us, that they are true.
Now, at the precise same time that he said all of these things would come to a great climax, he talked about another
very horrendous and insidious, ghastly evil that few people understand. That's why there is this mysterious parenthetical warning in the 15th verse of Matthew 24. Whoso reads this, he better understand it. He said, when you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation, the abomination that will make desolate, a dirty, rotten, hideous, stinking, filthy abomination in God's sight, that is going to cause death and desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, and he spoke of it in several of his chapters. You can find that by a simple little bit of biblical research. Stand in the holy place. Whoso reads, let him understand. Then, he said, a time to flee to a place of protection is going to occur, because he said, this modern society is going to come crumbling down around people's ears. And he said, you'd better be praying that your flight doesn't occur in the winter. And he said in verse 21, for then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. Now, how accurate is that? You have never lived in a time before when human annihilation is not only possible, but likely, unless the large governments and powers of this earth find some way to forestall it. And not too many people have too much faith they will do so. Possible by three separate methods. Chemical warfare, biological warfare, and nuclear warfare. Three separate methods by which humankind and all life could be obliterated from the face of the earth. And he said, except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Now, was Christ an alarmist? Was he a sundowner, a prophet of gloom and doom? You know, Christ continually tried to warn people of conditions the way they were. He walked up to a bluff overlooking Jerusalem and he wept over it. He said, oh, Jerusalem, I'm telling you, rotten, crime-ridden city, you kill the prophets, people come to try to warn you, you slaughter them, let them lie there in their own blood. How often would I have gathered you together and shown you mercy and shown you the way out of all of your rotten, heinous evils, but you wouldn't have it that way. So your house, he said, is left unto you desolate. People wouldn't listen to that warning, and let me tell you something else. There has never been a time save one in the entire history of humankind from the time Adam and Eve were kicked out of the garden that any human society has listened to a warning and staved off imminent problems, national collapse, a war, or what have you. One unique case in the entirety of all recorded history. And that was ancient Nineveh, the capital of Assyria. One man. That's all there was, one man. And maybe half of the populace called him a kook and a nut and a sundowner. And he sat under his castor bean plant with his chin in his hands and watched to see what was going to happen to that city, because he'd labored so long and so hard and been through so many traumatic experiences to be forced to take a message of warning to that people. And then he saw that of all things, the king believed him and turned around and repented. They called a national fast. Even the animals and the kids were involved, and they averted what was going to occur. The only time in all history. Now let me make clear what I stand for. If you think for one moment I'm trying to get this nation, or Great Britain, or you people in England, or Australia, or South Africa, to begin to march on your capitals and to start a movement, or to join a movement, or to get on the bandwagon and beat the gong and tell everybody the world is rotten and filled with crime and divorce and murder and wretchedness and madness and insanity, and we're all unhappy and it's miserable and gray and dull outside, then you've got another thing coming I'm not. But I'm commissioned to warn you the way the conditions really are, and whether you want to admit them or not doesn't cut one bit of ice. There was a man named Ezekiel. He didn't want to do it either. He was told to take a warning message to a people of his own speech, not some foreign tongue where they would misunderstand him because he didn't have the right accent or inflection. People who understood his talk, people who got his vernacular and maybe some of the slang expressions he would use in his language. He was told in Ezekiel 3 and verse 4 and 5, go, speak with my words unto them. You're not sent.
to a people of a strange speech and of a hard language, but to the house of Israel. Not to many people of a strange speech and a hard language whose words you cannot understand. And then he said, surely had I sent you to them, they would have listened to you. But the house of Israel will not hearken unto you, for they will not hearken unto me, for all the house of Israel are impudent and hard-hearted. He said, they won't listen. But go anyhow. Warn them anyhow, and I'm warning you. Our peoples are headed in the wrong direction. We are headed down. We lead the world in crime. We lead the world in divorce. We lead the world in growing leaps and bounds of venereal disease and pornography and slop and swill and filth. And as if to justify the whole mess, we put a manhole cover on it and sit around and talk back and forth on the telephone, in talk radio, and carp and gripe and make fun of and ridicule every prominent person, institution, member of government, or religion that exists on the face of the earth, the meanwhile playing a bizarre game of hide-and-go-seek. We deny conditions are real. We seek our pleasures. The biggest building boom in the United States of America today is in giant sports palaces where people can get all involved and purple-veined in anxiety over somebody stuffing a piece of cowhide through an iron hoop with string on it and get so excited they want to see a fighter tear the lungs out of the referee when he makes the wrong call. We sit down to be entertained just like the ancient Romans lining up for their soup dole in the next moment of the circus, crying for the blood of Christians. And when we react to world conditions, we say, I make it a policy never to worry about anything. I deny conditions are real. As one woman executive said when she was asked, are you concerned about the world and what it will be like 20 years from now? I have this documented right before me from the Inquiring Photographer, a column of the New York Daily News. She said, and I quote her words, I'm not in the least concerned. Each generation makes the world what it is, usually somewhat better than it was in the previous generation. End of quote. How do you like that one? I've got stats before me. I could practically bore you to tears with reading them that I put on the air recently about dating, about venereal disease, about teenagers, about growing crime, about the divorce rates among our youngsters. Every 1.5 minutes, there's an American divorce. I quoted that. I got it documented. I can give you tons of literature on it. When I say tons, I mean by that our bulging files representing the tons of newspapers, magazines, and script and copy from which these succinct points are taken. 30% of the world's divorces are granted in the United States, although we only have 6% of the Earth's population. More than 6 million Americans are now living divorced or separated. Every 1.5 minutes, there's another divorce. Our divorce rate is 6 times that of you people in Canada, 3.5 times that of France. That's proportionate to population, incidentally. You hear people telling you kids are as clean and decent as they've ever been. Oh, balderdash. The kids know better, and so do you. The U.S. now has approximately 1,700,000 new cases of venereal disease every year, and that's the reported cases, not the ones that aren't. You know, VD is climbing alarmingly among all social and status groups, and that's what the AMA says, not GTA, AMA. The American Medical Association reports that every day 1,500 United States teenagers and young adults are infected with syphilis, gonorrhea, or both. You want the facts? I've got them. And I quote my sources, and I'll tell you where the sources are. I'm quoting departments of public health, not one doctor sitting someplace in his labyrinth of his own clippings from some newspaper who tells you the news he'd like you to believe. I'm giving you the facts. There are nearly 300,000 known illegitimate births born every year in the United States, and pregnancy has been cited by a public health department as the number one health problem among the teenage group, and venereal disease is ranked number two. And that's documented. I've got it before me in black and white. And that's recent, by the way. That's 1966, by the way. That's not post-World War II or post-World War I. 40% of all these illegitimate children, 300,000 of them, are born to girls between 15 and 19 years of age. And one out of every 14 births is illegitimate among the white people. Among non-whites, it's one out of four. Not a prejudicial stat, that's a fact. That's the way it is. We don't like to admit it, but it's a fact. Now, our peoples are living life in the wrong way. We're living lives of self-centeredness, of carnality, of vanity, jealousy, lust, and greed, of a picky feeling, of strife and competition, of a dog-eat-dog competitive world, of keeping up with the Joneses and lusting after money and wanting to get something from nothing, and all the while denying that conditions are any worse than they've ever been. And wherever you look, you see every creeping evil that was gnawing away at the vitals of every great empire that came collapsing down to so much rubble and dust so long as history has been recorded. And right now, inside the United States of America and Great Britain, we are infected with the same diseases, socially, religiously, morally, governmentally, in any way you want to look at it, that brought Rome down. And we're going to come toppling down so fast it's going to make your head swim, unless a lot of major courses are suddenly reversed. I'm not talking about 2 weeks from now either. I mean today and tomorrow. I don't mean 2 or 3 years from now. We haven't got that kind of time. Now, if you want to sit back and listen to that ancient old swan song, the conditions are never a bit worse, that they're no worse than they've ever been, would you go right ahead? Some people listen to sick jokes too. You can make yourself happy listening to anything you'd like. I know that you have the key to the door of your mind. I've talked about the key to the door of people's minds and human nature. I know that people believe what they want to believe, not the truth. I know that's a factor of human nature. I know it's one of the most difficult things to do, to admit that a human being has been wrong. To come to see we've been wrong and that we can be right. I used to be a snot-nosed, carnal-minded, antagonistic, hostile ex-swabby that wasn't going to be told anything. I would have called in and given my views, too, to one of these talk programs, and I would have been talking just like a lot of the rest of the blather and the blither that you hear, with maybe two small brain cells dimly going. A few shocking jolts began to make me think and check up and find out and get down off the fence and begin to scramble around and get a little bit of the knowledge that I had been missing before. I used to flap my mouth when my mind wasn't in gear. Well, I'm not coming to you as just another casual spokesman on a radio program that you can either listen to or not as you care. I have a little bit of authority behind me that you're going to find out later is not that of human beings. It'll be a fresh new experience for some of you. Maybe you've never yet done it in your lives to write into a radio program. And to get a magazine that is just challenging enough that you can't kid yourself when you read it. That is going to make you come to issues and come to grips with conditions, and you can't deny it and you can't change it, but you're going to have to take a stand one way or the other, because the Plain Truth magazine gives you the plain truth about world conditions. And there is good news beyond, but it's not going to come to us so long as we deny the conditions are the way they are. The Plain Truth gives you the good news of tomorrow's world, not a fanciful world of the notions of teenagers, but the practical everyday world the way it will be. Now, if you want a booklet that will give you more than any other booklet can exactly what I'm talking about, what I stand for, why I draw breath, what I'm doing on the radio waves, then write for this booklet, The World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. And you'll get this insert of a could-be newspaper, the kind of news we could be reading and will be when you know the truth in the world tomorrow. It's free of charge, is no price, if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.